It is that time of the week once again here on this Saturday afternoon. Elephant in the room here with the talk of Pittsburgh 1320 WJAS, Daryl Grandy, and here in this post Sam DeMarco world of Republican leadership and Republican voices you hear on the Elephant in the Room. We've got a rotating cast of characters, some great, great folks, some proud Republicans in the area carrying the flag loud and proud. And another one joining us here, he's going to be doing the hosting chair for this week, one Mr. Todd McCollum. He is the Republican Committee Chairman of the City of Pittsburgh. Todd, welcome back. It's been a minute since you've been in the studios.
Thanks, Daryl. I have been the guest here a couple times now.
But you were in that chair, and now you're in this chair.
I know. This is my maiden voyage here, and I appreciate
this.
You being my wingman here.
You got this, brother.
And I have to say, happy birthday to you. You're pushing the buttons over there like a spry young man.
That's right. Much appreciated.
I appreciate you walking me through this here.
Not a problem, man.
And
now, who do you have with you here?
I do have Brian Wisemantle here. He is the Allegheny County Republican candidate for sheriff.
All right.
And do have a one other thing I do want to mention here.
Sure.
Because, well, first of all, happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. It's St. Right. Patrick's Day weekend here in Pittsburgh. It's a big deal. I have my green on today.
Yes, you do.
See, you can see when we're making...
loud and proud.
St. Patrick's Day, great again shirt.
Repping 45 and 47
That's
there.
Right.
Ironically, holding a beer in his hand. So, yeah.
But before
he's
we
not,
get
he's
started.
He's not one who partakes.
Before we get started with Brian, I do want to rep 35.
Yes.
The House seat 35. And Chuck Davis running for that.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I don't know what your St. Patrick's Day plans are, but my shenanigans will be out in the Mon Valley helping Chuck.
Okay.
Hitting some doors out there.
A little canvassing,
and,
huh?
Looking forward to it. Me and my good friend Eileen Cunningham have plans to be up in Little Liberty Borough and Portview Borough. And I grew up in the Mon Valley. I love the Mon Valley. I grew up in West Mifflin before moving to Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Spent some time in McKeesport as well. So I love the Mon Valley. I have had the opportunity to talk to Chuck, and he's a fine candidate. He will represent the Mon Valley well. People I have a great deal of respect for have a great deal of respect for him. So my St. Patrick's Day Saturday,
sure,
my shenanigans will be out in the Mon Valley. You have any
that's a very important step. I've got nothing going on, but that's a very important step that people could take right now, right? I know that's something that Sam has been asked a lot in his in his previous role, now of course his current role under David McCormick, is how people listening right now, how someone listening right now can get involved and get more involved and in tune with what's going on at the party, not just the county level, but in also your case the city level as well. You know, obviously it's a voice that, frankly speaking, has struggled to have been heard over the past few decades, of course, in the city. And, you know, there's energy to bring it back. Yourself and Sam and others are part of that in efforts to amplify that. What do you suggest from your point of view, from your catbird seat there, that people can do on a grassroots level to get involved, i.e. canvassing and knocking on doors and things like that?
Knocking
sort
on doors. There's always postcard
sure
events happening where we can just send a simple postcard to remind everybody, hey, there is a special election. To take a little a short spin off on this, if we renew our mail-in ballots every year,
sure,
you get the automatic reminder, and you would automatically receive a ballot for any special election that occurs. And this is a case where, I got my reminder from the county to re-up, and if you got yours from the Mon Valley and you sent it in right away, you will be receiving a ballot in the mail for the special election. You won't even have to go. You just hit your circle, send it back in, and no worrying about forgetting about it. No worrying about baseball practice or little league practice.
Life getting in the way.
Life being in the way, right?
Now, Sam, of course, talks a lot, and now, of course, Jason Ritchie, the heir apparent to Sam DeMarco, talks about the website, the web presence, Allegheny.gop. Is there a web presence or social presence for the committee on a city level?
Yes, there is. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on X.
On the socials, yep.
Find us on Instagram, and we are even on Truth Social as
okay,
well.
Okay, sure, sure.
Just Type in City of Pittsburgh Republican Committee, and it shows up. And
say less.
We have a big presence on Facebook and on X, and we're always involved in it. Website as well.
Sure.
Donate button. Donate button where we can help all our candidates. We help all our candidates equally.
Sure.
We have three people running for city council
In
respective districts, and we have a mayoral primary.
Yes, that's right, coming up.
So, I am going to swing the chair here because, you know, we have some county races going on, too. We have a Law and Order show today. A friend of mine, someone who I have a great deal of respect for, Brian Wisemantle, is the Republican candidate for Allegheny County Sheriff. Brian, welcome to the show. Welcome to the elephant in the room.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Daryl. And I'll start also with wishing everyone a happy St. Patrick's Day. Don't drink too much. We always know that may be a possibility there. Just be safe in what you do.
be responsible. Have somebody responsible for you and be safe as well.
Absolutely.
So, Brian, people want to know about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're the, like I said, you're the county candidate for sheriff.
Sure. My name is Brian Wisemantle, like they introduced me. Born and raised in Pittsburgh, obviously Allegheny County. Married to my wife of 37 years now, coming up on 38. We have two daughters. They're both in college at this time. Again, we've been in the city our whole lives. I'm retired from Pittsburgh Police. I was hired in 1990, and I retired in 2015, just shy of 25 years. But with my military service, that actually come out to 25 years total. During that time, I worked in the uniform capacity for a couple years. And then the remaining period was in the investigative branch, which I worked in narcotics, burglary squad, and then eventually in the homicide squad. And I was one of 11, or one of 12 detectives, I believe it was 12 at the time, selected out of 1,100 officers in our department at that time, which we really need back.
So you held a very coveted position as well. And that's not, I mean, that's just fact. A lot of people want to get to homicide. That's the high level, you know, high interest, speaking for people that can't speak for themselves anymore, or seeking justice for people that can't seek justice for themselves. You had a very important position.
Absolutely. Totally agree with that. And also with that, I started my military career back in 1983 at the age of 87. At the age of 17. Been in the military. I was with the Army Guard for 6 years. In 89, I transferred to the Air Force Reserve. I joined there until 1992, at which time I got on the police department in 1990. So as you know, Todd, our days off aren't the greatest.
Right.
Tuesday, Wednesday, right. If you're lucky. But
and that doesn't include all the times you're in court on your day off,
exactly,
too.
So, right. So it's like
there may not be any days off.
That's absolutely correct. And and because of that, I decided to take a break from the military. So I had an 8-year break, and then I reentered the service in the Air National Guard in 2000, and I remain there currently. And
what's your capacity there? If you
currently, I'm a master sergeant. And I work in the Logistics Readiness Squadron. And under that umbrella, we are the ground transportation section, which we basically touch anything that moves on the base. You know, whether it's loading aircrafts, you know, we're involved in some way, shape, or form with movement of any equipment, that type of thing. And I'm the non-commissioned officer in charge of that section currently.
So you have a good, great deal of responsibility there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said,
maybe not the greatest, but you have a large responsibility.
Certainly, certainly, yeah. And one of my responsibilities include I am the vehicle examiner. So any of our, including commercial vehicles, I'm the guy that has to sign off to say, yeah, you know, you're approved, you passed the test to make that possible so we can get them licensed, obviously, which assist with throughout the base. During my time in the Air National Guard, I was also a first sergeant for two tours. And that, you know, is a lot of responsibility there as well, because you're responsible for your groups of, depending on which section you're assigned to. Mine was a mission support group, which included approximately 300 troops total. And a lot of that, you know, you're responsible for morale, building morale. You're responsible to make sure these guys are ready to go out the door, and ladies, should the call come. So it's a lot of training. Again, we got to make sure they're healthy. You know, their morale's up and ready to go, and we got to get them out the door within 72 hours should we get the call.
That sounds like the duties of someone who would be in charge of a larger law enforcement department, right?
Absolutely. It's very similar to law enforcement. And again, you'll find a lot of military folks are also in law enforcement. It just kind of mirrors each other. You know, a lot of training. I've been through a lot of training, leadership courses. Again, the First Sergeant Academy. You know, all those things help with growing and leadership skills.
Okay, so, well, thanks for your service, of course. We appreciate that and keeping the country safe. So tell us a little bit more about what you did for the city of Pittsburgh.
Sure. With Pittsburgh, that was the best job ever. You know, working in homicide, I don't think you could really get much more pleasure than when you're solving these cases. It brings closure to the families. We are all they have, you know, at that time. And like I said, there's nothing better than solving cases, doing good things, and, you know, helping the family, being there for them, and just making sure, you know, we do what we can to get these cases solved and moved on. Which leads me to one of my, you know, career highlights, I would say, was in 2007 when we had 64 homicides, unfortunately, that year. And we were able to solve 76% of those, which was outstanding because I think the national average, I don't even know if it's around 50% today. It's probably below that. And including in that, we made 5 arrests from the previous years of homicide cases. And I'm glad to say that I was credited with having the highest clearance rate for that particular year.
Very impressive, very impressive. Any 75%, I think any baseball hitter would be very happy with a 75%
absolutely
hitting. And, so, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, another highlight that I'd like to add in there was on October 14th of 2011, I was presented with the Special Award for Exemplary Homicide Prosecution, and that was at the 11th Annual Amen Corner, Senator John Hines Law Enforcement Awards. Pretty prestigious award.
Very good. That's something to be proud of. And for those of out there listening, I'm a retired city police officer as well. Retired a little bit earlier than I had expected. Life threw some twists at me, and some health issues crept up. But you and I have crossed paths, and one of my career highlights, my star case was the Mr. Tommy shooting that happened in the early 2000s, where the young girl was killed. It ended up being a triple homicide, which included a very young girl out in Homewood. We crossed paths. A lot of work went into that case. I was the first officer on the scene. You know, you and I have talked about this, or you have a little recollection of that. What was your thoughts of that case?
Yeah, I mean, that was probably one of our worst cases, obviously, because we had 3 victims at one time. You know, thank God we don't have those every day, but we do, you know, we do get multiple homicides on occasion. Yeah, again, and any time you have children involved as victims, always makes it more difficult. And, you know, you just seem to get more energy for some reason when kids are involved. Not that any case lacks energy, but it's just you get that extra push when you're tired. You know, you want to keep going. You got to solve this. And we luckily did solve it with, I believe we had 3 arrests back then, and those individuals are currently serving life sentences.
And talk about solving any case, especially something like the Mr. Tommy shooting. It was a bold case. It was for those of you unfamiliar with it, it was essentially an assassination. There were some people that think it's safe to say were involved in the drug trafficking trade, and some rivals came in and just walked up to one gentleman and shot him in the back of the head, and the other people involved basically sprayed the dining room to circumvent the cover of the main shooter, and we ended up with a restaurant full of bullet holes. But that was, I'm sure, was solved with a lot of community cooperation. Want to throw any thoughts out there about community cooperation and how homicide cases are solved?
Sure, yeah. Again, that was one of our worst cases, I would say. And it was, I believe, like 4 in the afternoon or 5 in the afternoon. You probably remember the time better, but it was just...
It was dinner time. For 3/11 shift, it was dinner time. It was probably around 7 o'clock for us. Okay.
Again, just a tragedy, just so brazen to walk in a restaurant and just open fire. I mean, you know, this stuff shouldn't be happening, but it does, unfortunately. And, you know, we always come in after the fact when things are done, and then we build from the bottom up. And, you know, it takes a lot of time. You have to get cooperation from the community, which is most important in every case. You know, we struggle with that at the beginning, but we were able to get through. We did get some good cooperation. And again, you know, we successfully solved that case, and we made the 3 arrests.
Yeah, I think I recall, if not you, one of the other investigators said that it was so bold that had a child not been killed that day, it may not have spoke up. And I remember somebody telling us that in the hallway of the courthouse or something like that when we were.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. A lot of times the community will not get involved. I mean, there's a few homicides I can think of right now that we know who did it, but you know, we just can't go and arrest them. We need evidence. We need cooperation. You know, and it's unfortunate for these cases because they could be solved, but these guys, you know, that do these crimes, the public's afraid of them. You know, people see them, they know who they are, and, you know, oftentimes they'll target the witnesses, and that's what everyone's afraid of. So they decide, you know what, I'm not saying anything because I don't want to be the next one.
Sure. So with that in mind, is there a case that maybe didn't get solved where you knew who the person was and you just couldn't get that last witness or that key piece of evidence? Or is there a case, a cold case that just didn't get solved that sticks out in your mind more than the rest?
Yeah, I would say one. It was probably one of my first cases in my first year or two in homicide. It was a case up in a Hill District. It was a female that was stabbed and left in a wooded area. And that case, we put a lot of work into it. We thought we had some good leads. Well, we did have some good leads and a good suspect, but unfortunately we weren't able to bring that to a close.
Well, very stressful job. It seems like you're managing through it. But so tell everybody, you've seen some of the worst evil that humans can perpetrate on one another, I'm sure. What do you do as hobbies? How did you unwind from all this stuff?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It you know, it's very taxing on, you know, the investigators, without a doubt. You just have to learn different ways to deal with it. What I did a lot of times is I had a couple of rental properties that I purchased while I was on the job, and I decided that was my outlet. So when I finished up work, I'd go there. I was occupied all the time doing that type of work, and that got me through it. And, you know, some folks don't deal that well with it, but, you know, I was lucky enough to do that. You know, I did some fishing, did some weightlifting, you know, those types of things just to keep yourself together.
Okay. That's certainly a good example for somebody who would be leading a department full of law enforcement officers, public servants who see this evil, this terribleness on a regular basis. I hope you're well from someone who, you know, has been there and seen some of the same things. But you're a property owner. You enjoy recreation, I guess, shall we say, and renovation?
Correct. Yeah, you could say that. Yes, I have, you know, numerous rental properties, which I've done. Again, you know, I've done that through the years. That was one of my outlets. Not only was it a good outlet, it was profitable, mm-hmm. You know, and So that all comes over time. And, you know, I was successful with that and doing pretty well with that.
Well, once again, that's interesting because one of the main duties of the sheriff's department is to serve court orders, and a lot of that is evictions. So you have an understanding of how that process works, how you would want people to be treated going through that process. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, actually, I had to have a few folks evicted due to damages to the properties, which is unfortunate. So I'm aware of the process. You know, it's a legal process once you follow the steps, which could be anywhere from 3 to 6 months and then maybe even extended another year. I know through COVID it was really extended further out. And so, yeah, it's a process. It can be dangerous at times, so you have to be aware of, you know, what you're doing and where you're going and who you're dealing with.
Okay. What I do want to talk about, I mean, you are the candidate here, and we're going to be coming up on a break here shortly, but we have a few minutes. So this week you cleared the petition gathering process, and from someone who was out there with multiple city council candidates and mayoral candidates gathering up signatures, I know that that's stressful. I'm sure it was stressful for you, but I do know that you made it around to different points of the county. Tell us how your petition process went, and tell us where you've been and who you met, and tell us all about it.
Sure, yeah. It was a great experience. Pretty taxing and challenging at times, to say the least. Yeah, because we were required for this particular seat for the sheriff's office to obtain 500 signatures minimum. My goal was to get 800, 7 to 800, and I can say that I met that goal. I actually got over 800, and, you know, I pat myself on the back for that because that was a lot of work. I can say I got between 400 and 500 personally. I was there personally to witness those folks signing that. And that was done through traveling throughout the county from North Hills, Fox Chapel, Bethel Park, South Park. I mean, I think I hit every corner of the county. Monroeville, Plum, you name it, I was there. I had folks at Hampton Township just because I couldn't be at multiple meetings at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And together with some assistance from some other folks, you know, we successfully got the 800 signatures. I met mayors from small towns. I met school board members. And, you know, the greatest experience is when people shake your hand and thank you for running. And I got a lot of that. So that was pretty energizing, I could say.
Okay. You were helped by a lot of the committees. I know our committee helped you out. I believe you were out in Jefferson Hills, right?
Correct, yes.
The county vice chair, Lisa.
And, right.
And, you know, yep. She's a rock star as well.
Sue Means was great. Bob Howard, and I apologize for people I'm not mentioning, but yeah, we just a great group.
Were you surprised by the help that you got? I asked that as a committee chair because I think some people don't realize that there is help out there for you. Were you surprised by the help that and the eagerness of the chairs to help you out or the committees to help you out?
Yeah, absolutely. I was taking this all on my own shoulders. So at signature 300, I'm like, man, I don't know how this is going to go. But then I reached out to you, Todd. I reached out to some other, and you connected me with some other committee folks. Again, if I forget names, I'm sorry. I just met so many people.
I don't remember them all and, myself, so don't be.
Yeah, they were great people. They offered great assistance, and they helped with the signature process. So, you know, I'm thinking I got to carry this load on my shoulders, but help was available. You have to look out there and ask for it, and it came strong because I went from 300 to 800 in a week, so that was awesome.
That's good because we want that message to be out there because the potential candidate for anything, whether it's school board, you know, mayor, dog catcher, constable, you know, judge of elections, we want it known that there are people out there to help.
There certainly is, yes.
You know, our friend Daryl is sort of giving us a sign here. So we spent a lot of time with your bio here and getting to know you, but you are the candidate. So I think when we come back from break, I think I'm going to have to ask you some candidate questions here. And get your opinion on how things work as the sheriff here.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Okay. We'll be right back here after the break.
Back at it here, talking Pittsburgh 1320 WJAS. This is Elephant in the Room, presented in conjunction with the Allegheny County Republican Committee, RCAC, Allegheny.gop, for more information. And this has been a great conversation, Todd. It really has. Todd McCollum, he is the City of Pittsburgh Republican Committee Chairman. And I had a question for the guest here. And you had talked last half hour before the break about the process of getting signatures and knocking on doors and canvassing the entire area.
Yes.
They thanked you for running, and a lot of them did. You said, a number of them thank you for running. What were those conversations like when you walked up, shook their hand, had the petition, they signed it? What were some of the, what were they coming at you with? What questions? What concerns? What ideas? What things were they coming at you with? Because I mean, that they say all politics is local, right? So that has to be sort of like the ground floor of the things you'll need to be concerned with upon your taking the role.
Correct. Yeah, they were just happy to see that, there was a candidate for one. And two, they're concerned with public safety.
Sure.
Like we all should be.
Yeah, right. Who isn't?
So, especially in our city here with our short-staffed police department, which I would say. That was the big thing. Again, they were just congratulating me on that and just very happy. And
sure.
And glad to see that, we had someone.
Were they coming at you with any specific questions or specific? I mean, besides this is happening in my literal backyard. Can you fix it? Were they coming at you with specific themes and topics you could glom onto as you consider this journey?
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of time to talk because we were at some petition gatherings.
Oh,
so
sure.
A lot of it was short, but like I said, public safety was the issue.
Sure.
But again, it was just brief, just because we didn't have the opportunity or the time to discuss further.
Well, very nice, Todd.
Okay, thanks, Daryl, for bringing us back in. So, Brian, like I said before the break here, we now know you. We now know where you've been. And so now we'll go to where you're going. Why? Tell us why you want to be sheriff.
Sure. I made the decision to run for the office of the Allegheny County Sheriff because I've worked in public service for since I was the age of 17 back in 1983. I enjoy working public service, supporting the workforce in a positive manner, which I've done. I've learned so much, learned great experiences, leadership abilities, that type of thing. And it doesn't only benefit me, it benefits the staff, law enforcement officers as well, like yourself, and of course our civilians, which are our most important because that's why we're there. We're there to serve them, and they deserve the best that we can give them. And more importantly, the people of Allegheny County, and your staff, they're the most important because without them, without your staff, a good staff that's positive, healthy, and ready to go to work, that's what we need to keep everyone safe.
Sure. How do you see the duties of the sheriff?
The duties of the sheriff, to me, obviously they're responsible for the different divisions within the sheriff's department, which include the criminal, civil divisions, and their investigative division. I can say I know a lot of the deputies because of my time in the courthouse. I probably spent more than half my career in the courtroom, and great experience, which you're never going to get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You can't buy that stuff. I mean, it's just that good. But the duties of the sheriff, are to oversee the courtroom security, whether it's city court, criminal court, orphans court, juvenile court. It's in also, transporting prisoners to and from, which that takes, good people to do that. So it's done safely without issues and concerns. And also the real estate division. And then their investigative service, investigative department section, which I've worked with those guys for probably the majority of my career in homicide, because once we obtained warrants, they always offered assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go with them and, make those arrests safely, because we'd have, whatever we needed, plenty of manpower, the expertise of these guys.
Manpower, something we talk about in Pittsburgh all the time, right? Presence and manpower.
Absolutely.
But I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. But, they were great guys that we worked with there. And, that's partly why I want to run too, because, the sheriff's responsible for these guys and girls. You have to take care of them. They're out there taking care of the public, and they need to be taken care of inside. And, that's one of my motivations. I just think that, we have to take care of our law enforcement.
I wanted to go back to something we talked about in the first half and how you took care of, how you managed it, seeing some of the worst things that humans could perpetrate on one another. And you have a good experience of how to handle that. And you can pass that down through your employees as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, again, these are things that you learn from experience. You have to get out there. You got to be on the street. You have to talk to people. You have to deal with people. You have to learn people and learn, everything about them that you can. That helps you grow. And in combination with my military experience, I just learned so much between the two agencies that, it's incredible.
Okay. Going back again to your military experience, you're going to be the manager and budget coordinator for a large division of the county. How will you manage that?
Sure. Well, I have a variety of, I would say, budgetary and management experience. Again, beginning with my private eye business, I've been in business 10 years. Pre-COVID, my business was booming, just like many others. I took some hits through COVID, just like everyone else. But, you're talking about, paying your bills, your computers, your equipment, your vehicles, all that kind of stuff. That was all my responsibility as the owner. And so that was one management experience in budget. Again, back to my properties, I'm managing over $1 million in properties. There's always issues, whether it's, you plan on certain things, doing certain things through the year. But then, you got to plan for the unexpected. Do we have a hole in a roof because of the rain, the storms, the winter, the snow, that, or a broken pipe through the frozen winters, which I've had this year. But I'm sure many others have too. But again, that's just, another area of managing your money and your property. I've worked for a school doing their safety and security. Again, managing that budget, planning on what upgrades to make, whether it's access control, cameras, just every aspect of anything to do with safety and security of a school.
So it's safe to say that you'll be a good fiduciary of the taxpayers' money then?
Absolutely. I look at anyone's money like it's mine, and I find ways to save it and not harming anyone, because we want to keep our staff employed. But, there's always areas for some savings, and, we always need to set a little aside just in case, we have some unexpected things that come up. And I think that's just being a good manager, both for the budget, for the people, and the agency as a whole.
You mentioned your business. I don't think you brought that up too much in the, if at all, in the first half. You want to touch on that for a brief second?
Sure, yeah. I just talking about so much, I just kind of skipped over it. But I've been in business, my own private investigative business, for the last 10 years, from 2015 when I retired until the current time. So it'll actually be 10 years this summer here. But just working for people, bringing some closure to their cases. I didn't do many criminal cases, which I kind of stayed away from because I was law enforcement. But if there was a case that required some attention and assistance, I was glad to do it because I'm a straight shooter. If you're right, you're right. If you're wrong, you're wrong. And, I was all about pursuing what the truth was. And if it benefited an individual that was, charged with something or accused of something, then, I would stand behind them and do the right thing. And I think I've done that. I've worked for the Fraternal Order of Police for many cases.
Okay.
Very, very happy with me. Again, some officers were accused of some different things, and we were able to dispute that, and I can gladly save a couple jobs of our fellow officers. So, yeah, so I've worked for FOP, I've worked for attorneys. You name it, I do it. I've worked for private citizens, everyone was always very happy and commented. I always give advice out. You know, a lot of people say, like, Brian, you should be charging these people. You know what? If you call me and you have a question, I'm glad to sit there for 5 minutes or 35 minutes or an hour, and I've done it many times. You know, I'm not looking for a dollar. If I can help you, that's what I want to do.
So it's safe to say you would be looking out for your employees. Like you said, you've saved jobs. You would be happy to stand up for somebody that is accused of wrong, and when they're right, they're right.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, without a doubt, I'm a straight shooter. If if there's issues and you're right, I'm going to stand behind you. If there's issues and you're wrong, then you're going to have to deal with that. I don't have a problem with that, and I would like to believe that no one would have a problem.
And
with
I think that's what most police officers want to know, or most law enforcement officers want to know, is that their upper administration stands by them when the times are tough.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a big problem throughout the state, probably the country, where the department heads are not standing up for their personnel, and I think it's pretty sad because. You know, again, if you're right, you're right. If you're wrong, you're wrong. And you have to deal with it and face the consequences. And I'm a firm believer in that. I've always been that way. That's how I taught my kids. And I'll stand by that forever.
Okay. So a little out of the box question for you. I think you know that the sheriff in his position, his or her position, has a seat on the Allegheny County Jail Oversight Board, commonly known to many of us in politics as the Bethany Hallam Show, because she takes it over and plays to the masses there. And I'm not tooting my own horn here, but I am a regular attender of the Jail Oversight Board. And that's something I've taken on by choice, because I don't think it should be a room full of law enforcement, justice, people in that room, and all they do is just sit there and wail on the jail guards and the police and say how terrible the jail is and how it should be bulldozed and everything like that. Mm-hmm. That was my choice to do that, because I want a Republican representative in that room. And if I'm not there, I check in on it. But I have been there mostly for the past year, and at times I've wanted to jam ice picks into my eyes and my ears because it's painful. But did you know that the sheriff has a seat on that board?
Yes.
The current sheriff is, shall we say, inconsistent with being there and inconsistent on important votes that happened within the jail board when one actually does come up. Give me your thoughts on... Well, you can take this and run however you want with it. Working with Bethany Hallam is an issue. Your opinion on helping people in jail. I don't think the Democrats should be the party of second chances. I think we should be as well. If you've paid your debt, you move on, or you're innocent until proven guilty. Give us your thoughts on the Jail Oversight Board and how you will see your position on that.
Sure. First of all, I think it's kind of sad that the sheriff is not making the meetings, because he brings a unique perspective to it, because he's law enforcement. Like it or not, you're the sheriff, you're law enforcement. That could be very beneficial in any decision making on the jail board. You know, whether you're outnumbered or not, you can at least be heard and put that on the table. Again, like you said, everyone deserves a second chance. Hey, if you did what you did, you'd take responsibility. Did your sentence, whatever, your probation. Then, you go free, you move on, and hopefully you don't come back. But you can't just do things and not have any type of punishment, per se. As far as Bethany Hallam and the rest of the folks, I've worked with everyone, and I can work with anyone. I've done it. I've talked to kids, I've talked to doctors, interviewed other law enforcement. I've been involved in a lot of officer-involved shootings. I've interviewed from every avenue, every way of life, and I'm capable of working with anyone, and I can work with anyone. And I would, enjoy that, because again, I would give the perspective from the law enforcement side of things. Hey, maybe we should look at this instead of that. You know, there's always another avenue to look or take.
The jail guards typically take a beating in these meetings. I would think that you would stand up for them when necessary. I think, and you'd mentioned working with the sheriffs and shackles and other things, and you know, it goes back to the jail guards are restricted by some of the overreaching petitions ballot initiatives, the word that I'm looking for, that have been passed by the county, where the jail guards can't use leg shackles and the restraint chair, things that keep them safe. And the complaint always is, well, the jail guards take somebody to the hospital, call the sheriff's department for relief, and they can't have the jail guards can't have shackles, so it's a risk, a flight risk for the inmate or the imprisoned person. And the sheriffs come in, and the first thing they do is they put leg shackles and all kinds of restraints on them, and it's a two-way standard of that. That's the biggest complaint of the jail guards by what I see. Any thoughts on that and how you stand up for the jail guards?
Sure, yeah, absolutely I would stand up for the jail guards. Again, you know, here's the whole thing. It's about public safety. So, you know, if I'm transporting an inmate to the hospital, you know, they're an inmate, okay, like it or not. We're not going to treat them inhumane. But, you know, they need to be shackled. They need to be handcuffed. We have to make sure they get back to the jail. You know, the counsel at the table is not going to be responsible if this guy escapes or if this guy does something to, you know, another patient at the hospital. I mean, it's just not about the inmate, okay? We have public safety here, and that's what's at risk. Therefore, I'm all for, and I think it's proper, you know, if you're in custody, you know, you need to be handcuffed and you need to be shackled or, you know, whatever the case may be. Regarding the chair at the jail, the restraining chair, I've seen it used appropriately the times that I've seen it used. And, you know, occasionally you get some patients or some inmates that are just out of control. And that's your only option. And again, it's safety for them. You know, I've seen inmates throw themselves on the floor, bang their heads off the wall. I mean, come on, we're trying to help and save these inmates. You know what I mean? We're not looking for them to get injured worse or, you know, banging your head off the wall. You know, that can cause some pretty serious damage. So it's not that we're treating anyone inhumane. I think it's just, look, these are steps we have to take to ensure everyone's safety. And again, a safe return to the jail after treatment.
Okay. Be responsible for issuing firearms permits. You can take a moment to talk about, you know, your thoughts on that. Are the laws that are in place for firearm ownership, are they appropriate? Do they need tweaked? Or are you happy with it? General thoughts on the permitting process.
Sure. I think the permitting process is proper. Again, I don't have any, insight to like anything that's not being done properly. But, you know, if you're legally allowed to carry, you're legally allowed to carry, and you should be able to get a permit if that's what you choose to do. You know, regarding gun laws and gun issues, I think a bigger problem is, from my experience, when I was working on, you know, Pittsburgh Police Department and within the homicide section, the courts would often maybe merge these with other crimes or, you know, give a lesser sentence. And maybe they want to give the guy a break or girl a break. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're still responsible, again, for public safety. And all these matters are, you know, public safety issues. So, I mean, if you're entitled to carry a gun, you know, never been involved in any type of crimes or convicted of anything, and, you know, that's what the Second Amendment's all about. You have a right to carry. You have a right to do what you want to do. You just don't have a right to commit a crime.
Okay. You had mentioned working with the Sheriff's Department in warrant services. And of course, the Sheriff's Department is the enforcement arm of the court. Tell us about warrant services. And if I can ask your opinion on some of the magistrate opinions. I know that part of the warrant services going out and picking up people who didn't show up for court, and a lot of that is based on magistrates who are being a little too lenient on bail. I'll give you a second or two, minute to give your thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, typically you know, magistrates, once they're the arrestees brought in, they'll be arraigned. Obviously, we don't control the bail that they set, if they set any. But where we come into play is, you know, if someone's released, it shouldn't be released, and the upper court decides that, hey, you know, you need to go get this guy or girl, then that's something would, you know, that we would do. So it's kind of hard to say what the judge is going to do, but, you know, we come in after the fact and, you know, do whatever is necessary and required by the court.
Would you agree that some people should be in jail post-arrest and awaiting trial, and some of them are being let out inappropriately?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, in my opinion, and I believe this is the way it's supposed to be, the judge is supposed to review their criminal record if they have one. If we get someone that just did a retail theft for a small item or product, nominal bond or ROR, I don't think anyone has a problem with that. You know, you get the local with maybe a little bit of marijuana or something. You know, we've all had those arrests where, you know, there may be other circumstances surrounding forcing you to make that arrest. So you do that, you know, ROR, not a big deal. Now, you know, we move forward to a big drug bust, which I recall when I was back in, actually uniform capacity back in 91. And I'll never forget this case because my partner and I, we arrested this guy. He had, I'm going to say, I can't recall the exact amount, but it was a lot of crack cocaine. And he was from Florida. Well, before we knew it, before the night was out, this guy was released and sent on his way. And I think it was probably 4 or 5 years before they found him. So as soon as he got released, he fled. I mean, there's a guy that should have had a pretty hefty bond put on him. I'm sure he had a history because we probably didn't know his true identity. I would say he was probably not from, you know, Pittsburgh to begin with. But, you know, that, or if someone comes in for a shooting, you know, I don't believe at the magistrate level, you know, you should be a minimal bond for that type of thing. I mean, if you have an issue with it or if you're unsure, you know, give a higher bond and the attorneys can appeal that decision up to criminal court and let, you know, the criminal court judges make that call. Again, it all comes down to public safety. And I've seen it. I'm sure you've seen it, Todd. And it's really unfortunate, but it does happen.
Okay. Getting thin on time here. So a yes or no answer to this question. It's the hot topic. ICE cooperation, yes or no?
Yes, I would cooperate with ICE. I don't have a problem with that. We're obligated to cooperate with any law enforcement agency. Am I going to go out and profile and target individuals? No, that's not what I do. That's not what I've never done. But, hey, if an agency calls and says, we need your assistance, we are law enforcement. We're sworn law enforcement. That's an oath that we take, and we are obligated to do that.
Okay, thanks. Getting the signal here. And I do want to have you, I want you to have a closing statement here. So the final question for you is, how do you see your difference between current sheriff and yourself, and how do you plan on campaigning moving forward here?
Okay. How long do we have?
You got us.
Okay. Yeah. The difference between the current sheriff and myself, I would say Mr. Cross, I would argue he is not a good leader from what I understand. He does have a lot of supervisory training. I'll give him that. Absolutely. That's all on paper. Paper doesn't cut it. Okay. You have to be able to go out there, employ it, utilize that training. And in my opinion, I don't think he's doing that because I've worked with him for many years and I've seen him work. I know how he works. And again, we were at Pittsburgh Police for, I'm guessing, maybe 8 to 10 years approximately. And what I can tell you, the difference between the two of us is my leadership skills I obtain through work experiences, life experiences, and my military career, which I've done over the last 30 years. I bring the utmost integrity. No one can dispute that. I'm honest, strong morals and values, fairness and empathy. I'm fair and understanding to everyone. And, you know, that's my goal. That's my mission. And also, like I said, I bring an unmatched military experience, leadership, which I obtained through my 33 years of military service, my military leadership courses, being first sergeant, taking care of the troops, making sure that everyone's ready to go, morale's high, and just caring for, you know, everyone to make sure they're ready to go.
Okay. We hope you enjoyed this time with candidate for sheriff, Brian Wisemantle.
And if I could just bring this to a closure.
Sure.
With this, what I would like to say is, what I can bring to the sheriff's office of Allegheny County, this is why the voters should vote for me, because these are the things that I can bring to the sheriff's office, to the employees, you know, whether it's civilian or law enforcement. And that's why I'm asking for your vote to become the 55th sheriff of Allegheny County. Thank you.
All right, Brian, thanks for being with us here. Good luck to you on your campaign. I hope the voters get out for you in the fall. And that should be it, Daryl, for this edition of The Elephant in the Room. You
good
can
stuff.
Wrap it up.
Good stuff, Todd. Good stuff, Todd McCullough. Excellent stuff. Again, Allegheny County Republican Committee, that's what this is all about, the elephant in the room here on the Talk of Pittsburgh, 1320 WJAS, allegheny.gop for more information on everything going on with the Republican Committee of Allegheny County. All the great candidates, all the great initiatives that are in place from the party, from the chairman, Jason Ritchie, on down, and including, of course, shout out to the great work by the executive director, John Schneider, putting a whole lot of stuff together. That man wears many, many hats, to be sure. We'll catch you right back here in 7 days. This is The Elf in the Room here on the Talk of Pittsburgh, 1320 WJAS. Have a great St. Patrick's Day weekend.